Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Father Patrick Collins as he gave us a sort of state of the church, as he does every so often here on WGVU, and we've got him back again to finish our conversation. So, Father Collins, welcome back to Common Threads.
Thank you.
So last week, oh boy, we covered some ground. We were talking about the lack of attendance, the concern for this next generation of Catholics coming up. We talked about the sexual abuse scandal, the priests, and now, of course, the bishops. We talked a little bit about the new pope. But there are plenty of other things to talk about. One of the things, and you and I have had personal conversations about this, this draw of millennials towards this spiritual but not religious, this rather nebulous theology or lack thereof. And I'm curious, aside from the fact that you notice that churches are just becoming grayer and grayer and grayer, and congregations smaller and smaller, have you had conversations with younger people who've explained why they did not take the mantle of their parents and continue to be Catholic?
excuse me. Unfortunately, Fred, I have not. I'm kind of out of touch with younger people, being retired and so on. But mainly what I know about is what I read and what I hear from older people about their children and their grandchildren. I will meet people in these parishes where I preach, people of my generation and a little younger, who will say they spent all this money on Catholic education for their kids and none of them go to church, and their grandchildren aren't even baptized. I hear that over and over again. And so I have to ask myself what's going on and try to think it through. And I've come up with two problems, one church-related, one culture-related. I think in the culture, we've become such individualists in the way we think about ourselves. It's my way, no way, and I don't need you. And so why would you join a community? Why would you get married? You know, marriage is on the way out. A lot of people aren't getting married. I just read today that in 2017, only 22% of marriages were church-related, compared to 40-some about 10 years ago, 40% about 10 years ago. I think people don't feel like they need community. They don't see any point in it. It's kind of a pain, and why bother with other people? I'll just do my thing. Individualism has really triumphed, and in time, I think that will prove to be a problem because humans aren't meant to be alone. We're meant to be connected, and once it's just my way, it's going to be friction and war and problems. So I think that's a cultural issue. Related to that culturally, it seems to me, is the secularism. Everything is on the horizontal level. Everything is this world, what I can have, what I do, where I live, what I drive, what I'm called. It's all about this world. There's no transcendent referent, no looking up, no vertical referent in the consciousness of our culture. And if there's no vertical referent, if there's no God involved, you don't need God and Christ and the church and prayer and those things. Suicide, I notice, is in the way up lately. And I think that also stems from the fact that if there's no vertical, if there's no transcendent referent, what does it mean? If it just means about what you're called and where you live and what you drive, that kind of falls flat eventually. There's no referent beyond yourself and those things. So between individualism and secularism, I think the culture has a major problem relating to religion. Why would you need religion? The church's problem, I think, is partly not just the abuse issues and the violations of trust, but the way we've gone about presenting religion has been too doctrinal, too intellectual, too heady, too much about rituals, rules, and doctrines to be memorized and affirmed as if that's your faith. That's second-level stuff. That's the way faith is talked about. That's the way faith is practiced. But that's not faith. Faith is meant to be a personal experience of God in your consciousness, in your life, in your world. And it relates you to your life and your world in a different way, because it's not just about you. It's about you having a responsibility to do something in the world to make it better, to make it the way God wants it. But if God isn't part of the picture, it's just the way I want it. And I think the church has been far too heady in the way we've presented it. My suggestion at my old age would be for the church to emphasize narrative, story. The gospel, after all, is not a bunch of doctrines and rules. It's a collection of stories in which each of us is meant to find our own personal story. One writer said, stories give you room to walk around in the story and find your own story. And I think if we presented the story of Jesus, the God story in creative history, and helped us find our way into that story and participate in it, that would be exciting. That would be challenging. That would be comforting. And that would allow for the pastoral approach we talked about last week. Everybody gets to kind of come at it in a different way, but we're all up to the same thing. We're all up to living out the great story.
What would you do with, say, the Nicene Creed? Is that still relevant to be? I mean, not that it shouldn't exist, but in terms of a weekly recitation and a commitment to being able to say, yes, as a Catholic or a Christian, because I know some Protestants also use the Creed in their worship services, to be able to declare communally, this is what we believe.
I find that the reciting the creeds, you know, Sunday after Sunday to be just very tiresome, and people look bored out of their gourd standing there muttering these phrases. It's not that we don't believe them. It's not that they're not true. It's not that they're not intellectually interesting or historically created. They all were, and they're still valid. But I don't think it's helpful to have to stand up and say that, all those theological phrases, every week. I wish we didn't have to do that. Some parishes do the Apostles' Creed as a variant on that, and I think you're allowed to do that at least some times of the year. But still, it's a lot of theological phraseology that I don't think is experientially helpful for your faith.
So how does the church go from where it is now to where you would like it? Just in this one area in terms of encouraging narrative.
The narrative.
I mean, is there a movement in the church that perhaps I'm not aware of that is trying to bring it to that?
The recent popes, John Paul II and Benedict and Francis, have all talked about what they call the new evangelization, which means the new way of spreading the gospel. And when they began talking about that, I began to try to read what they were saying and see what do you mean by this new evangelization. And I kind of got the impression that what they were trying to do was to reimpose the catechism, you know, because after Vatican II, we kind of veered away from memorizing the catechism as the way of passing on the faith and went to more experiential, hands-on, touchy-feely stuff in catechetical work, and kind of lost touch with the hard, cold facts of the catechism. And my impression was, and I think that was a bad thing in a way, because I do think we lost a rational foundation for our faith by not teaching the catechism. But if that's all you teach, it's just in your head. It's not in your life. So balancing the two is important. So I began to wonder, are we supposed to go back now to teaching the catechism again? And I don't think it was ever clear to me what they really mean by the new evangelization. What what I would like to see with the new evangelization is going to this story business, the narrative, Because evangelization means the gospel. You're spreading the gospel. How do you spread the gospel? By relating it to your life. By finding experiences and questions in life that the gospel sheds a light on. And let that be your lived faith. Living out this light that's shining into your experience to help you know what it means. Give meaning to your existence, to your life. So I would like to see that happen at the level of catechesis, evangelization. But more important to me, and I don't see this happening very much at a broad level, bringing to the surface the contemplative dimension of the Christian tradition and all the religious traditions, your own Hindu tradition, the Buddhist tradition, contemplative dimension. You say, well, what is that? Well, that relates the narrative to your own story through prayer, through a discipline. One Buddhist monk said to Thomas Merton, don't tell me what you believe, tell me how you practice. So it would be a way of helping people practice contemplative prayer with the scriptures, which then become their life. The connection between the Word of God and the Word of my own life, that link happens through my prayer time, through the solitude and the silence of praying with the Word, being with the Word, and letting this be an experience of God, not just ideas about God, which is what the Catechism and the Nicene Creed give you.
You know, it's interesting that there is quite a growth in the discipline of contemplation and meditation in Western society here in the United States. But the interesting part about it is it tends to be heavily secular. So, for instance,
yoga.
Yoga, which has a deep spiritual tradition, but that spiritual tradition has been extricated, if you will. I mean, it would be like taking the Eucharist and then just having a party where people are eating bread and wine. The same is true for meditation. You have this mindfulness movement, and I'm not criticizing this. I'm simply reporting what is. That there is this mindfulness movement, this meditation movement, where people are taking up the practice, but they seem to be taking up the practice for purely pragmatic secular reasons. I want less stress in my
stress.
Life. I want some alone time. I enjoy the quiet. Those are all very wonderful reasons, and I wouldn't try to talk anybody out of that practice, nor would I attempt to try to talk somebody who has a completely secular worldview into making it spiritual if they don't feel that call. I also see, I've spoken to people who practice meditation, who teach meditation from a religious standpoint. I've also heard from them that they get people saying, you know, I took this meditation course, in a secular setting, and I like it, but now I want to take it to a higher level. I want to take it, as you would say, vertically. It doesn't happen all the time, but, you know, it's there.
Well, I think that's what people, young people, you talk about the millennials, I think a major value for young people is experience. You can't just tell me about it. I have to have an experience of it. And that applies to religion as well. We need to have an experience of the transcendent in our lives, of God, not as somebody said, death is God's final gotcha. One of my friends said that as he was preparing to die of cancer at the age of 50. Death is God's final gotcha. But that God is with you before the gotcha. God is with you always. When you were with God, the problem is you just don't know it. You have to wake up to it, to realize it, to make it real for yourself. And so somewhere at this, through this word experience, I think you can begin to connect with the millennials who want to have an experience. And I think when they say I'm spiritual but not religious, I think that's kind of what they're saying. Whatever spiritual means to them, whether it means this mindfulness or, you know, being more at peace or whatever, that's the experience they're looking for. And they don't find that religion gives them any help or grounding of that. To me, it's a matter of both and. The religion gives me the story that can ground my spiritual experience. And chances are, if I'm not grounded in a story bigger than my own, I can end up in idolatry, idolizing myself and how I feel about this. How do I feel about that? How do I think about that? Rather than who are we and what do we mean together as a world, as an earth, as a people?
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today, Father Patrick Collins. I was having a conversation with someone not too terribly long ago. He said something interesting. He is a practicing Catholic, and he seeks out people such as you, right, in his community. He seeks out a more progressive Catholic voice. And at the same time, he also listens to the Catholic radio network, EWTN. Mm-hmm. And he's absolutely amazed when he speaks to people who would say are on your team, if you will. He feels uplifted and joyous and very proud to identify as a Roman Catholic. But he said, when I listen to the Catholic radio shows, I think I'm in second grade again.
Hmm.
Because I've listened to Catholic radio on occasion just to hear what he's saying. And the kinds of questions that they talk about is like how to avoid going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
How hot is purgatory? I remember a call-in show where a woman, she called a priest. She's a Eucharistic minister, and she accidentally took three hosts and put them in her purse and forgot about them and wanted to know, should she go to confession? Those are the kinds of things
That's a law and order kind of religion. You want to see, did I obey all the rules? And if I didn't, how can I get freed up from my guilt?
Exactly.
That's not the Catholicism that I care about.
But his question, and my question as well, isn't it the person who holds the talking stick is the one who controls the conversation?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like if you want that kind of Catholicism, you know where to get it. You can get it all over the world, especially now. You don't even have to listen to it on the radio. You can find the app for it. Where does one go to hear the kind of conversation that you offer and your colleagues on a regular basis, if you will? Aren't you still a little bit on the fringe, would you say, or are you becoming more mainstream?
Well, I think it's in the print media a lot. I mean, most of the stuff I've been talking about is based upon stuff I've read in the newspapers, articles, books, magazines. I don't know that it's out there in the television and in radio media. I think that's a good question.
I haven't found it if it is. I scour TV and radio, both terrestrial and internet, always looking for interesting things of a spiritual nature. And if there is a progressive, narrative-oriented Catholicism out there, I don't know about it.
Well, do you know the name Richard Rohr?
Oh, of
Richard
course. He's been on this program before.
Well, I think he's an example, but he doesn't have a television show. He has an internet community that he works with
Yes. All
the time. We hear from him every day in his meditations. He certainly represents the contemplation in action connection that we're talking about. But he doesn't. I don't think he has a radio show, and
I don't believe he does either.
When I was in Peoria, I had a television series for two or three years called More Than Meets the Eye.
Really?
Yeah. It was a way of relating religion and culture so that you would see in the culture more than meets the eye. You'd see the transcendent dimension. And I explored all sorts of subjects and had guest speakers on with me and used a lot of the arts, singing and dance. Had the Peoria Ballet performed for one of my programs. It was a wonderful series. It was aired out of New York on the Catholic Television Network of New York for a while.
You produced it in Peoria?
I produced it. I starred in it. I was the host and all this. And it was a lot of fun. People in Peoria raised money to put it on.
But you say that it was broadcast out of New York.
Well, it was broadcast in Peoria, and then the Catholic Television Network out in New York picked it up, and they used the series. I think it was maybe 3 years of 12 programs each year or something like that.
Oh,
it was kind of fun.
I don't think we've ever had a conversation on this.
Well, you know, some people were saying, in Peoria were saying, we need a new Bishop Sheen. And some people were saying, you can be the new Bishop Sheen. Well, never for a minute did I, in my wildest arrogance, think of myself as Bishop Sheen. But I think they were right in saying, we need somebody like that on television to give the message, somebody that's appealing, intellectually interesting, and knows how to use the media. Well, I didn't, but I was learning. And we had some really interesting shows, I thought.
Oh, wonderful. Are you still giving retreats?
I've given up the retreats pretty much in the parish missions. It was just, I'm almost 82 years old, and it was just too much stress for me, required too much energy. Plus, I remember the last parish mission I was giving, I was finding I was boring myself. I'd been saying the same thing to different audiences all over the country for so many years. I was boring myself, and I thought, this must be time to quit. But I still do the preaching on weekends for the poor, for Cross Catholic Outreach, and I still have the energy to do that and enjoy doing that.
That is amazing. So you are in different cities every weekend, almost every weekend.
40 weekends a year, just about, yeah.
And that often involves plane travel.
Oh, almost always, unless I can drive. If it's a short distance in Michigan somewhere, I can drive. But usually, like, I fly to Mobile, Alabama tomorrow, and that somebody will pick me up and drive me an hour's distance to a parish in Mississippi. And then Sunday afternoon, they'll drive me back to Mobile, and I'll fly to Grand Rapids.
That, to me, is just an amazing
It is stressful, and it's getting harder as I get older. It takes me about 2 days to recover.
Does it really?
Yeah, Monday I don't do anything, and I'm finding even on Tuesday I'm still tired. But I love doing it, and I hope I can keep doing it.
That's wonderful. I mean, it's just the fact that when you go to the airport, you have no idea. Talk about the exercise of surrender.
It is.
That really is.
It's a turning
air
over.
Travel is a spiritual, you can be a spiritual practice.
It is.
Because you surrender to the cosmic will.
Yep. And you have surrender to whatever's going to happen.
No idea when you're going to take off, when you're going to land, and
and where you're going to sleep.
Where you're going to sleep.
I'm sorry to say, in one rectory I slept in, I picked up the thing called scabies, something that gets into your skin.
Oh, no.
Oh, and it lasted for months. I couldn't get rid of it. So the doctor wanted to know if I sleep around a lot, and I said, well, every weekend I sleep in a different rectory, but I'm not sure that's what you mean. So, yeah, it's a trial, but I sometimes think, you know, I'm preaching for the poor, and I'm thinking the poor people put up with a lot of indignities and inconveniences, and so I shouldn't complain about a few.
That's a marvelous attitude. Yeah. Marvelous attitude to take. And do you have a spiritual community here locally?
I do not, and that makes me sad. On weekends I'm gone, and that's when spiritual communities tend to gather. So I don't. I'm part of a Merton discussion group that meets once a month on the third Wednesday or something at the Baker Bookstore. And I often don't make that because I'm doing something or I'm gone. But no, I don't. And I'm impoverished, I think, because I don't.
Well, Patrick, it was wonderful having you here this week and last week as well.
Thank you.
It's always great to have your insights and learn about your take on things. So we wish you well, and we'll certainly be having you back in the not too terribly distant.
Thank you, Fred. God bless you.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella. Father Patrick Collins has been our guest today and last week as well. Please join us again next week for another edition of Common Threads.